Chapter 33. Terry, darling, why on earth should I go all the way out to Kitchenerville to watch a lot of savages prancing around? As a favour to me, Joy, Terry pleaded into the telephone. It means mucking up my whole weekend, said the other girl. I've got rid of the kids to their grandmother. I've got a copy of A Small Town in Germany, and I was going to have a lovely time reading, and please, Joy, you're my last hope, said Terry. What time will we be home? Joy was weakening. Terry sensed her advantage and pressed forward ruthlessly. You might meet a lovely man out at the mine, and he'll sweep you to... No thanks. Joy had been divorced a little over a year ago. Some people took longer than others to recover. I've had lovely men in big, fat chunks. Oh, Joy, you can't sit around moping forever, said Terry. Come on, I'll pick you up in half an hour. Joy sighed with resignation. Damn you, Terry Steiner. Half an hour, said Terry, and hung up before she could change her mind. I'm playing golf. It's Saturday and I'm playing golf, said Dr. Daniel Stander stubbornly. You remember when I drove all the way to Bloemfontein to... Rod began, and Dan interrupted quickly. All right, I remember. You don't have to bring that up again. You owe me plenty, Stander, Rod reminded him. All I am asking is one of your lousy Saturday afternoons. Is that so much? I can't let the boys down. It's a long-standing date. Dan wriggled to escape. I've already phoned Ben, said Rod. It will be a pleasure for him to take your place. There was a long, gloomy silence. And then Dan asked, What's this bird like? She's a beautiful, rich nymphomaniac, and she owns a brewery. Yeah, yeah, said Dan sarcastically. All right, I'll do it. But I hereby declare all my obligation and debts to you fully discharged. I'll give you a written receipt, Rod agreed. Dan was still sulking when the Daimler came up the drive and parked at the front of the mine club. He and Rod were standing at the ladies' bar, watching for the arrival of their guests. Dan had just ordered his third beer. Here they come, said Rod. Is that them? Dan's depression lifted magically as he peered through the coloured glass windows. The chauffeur was letting the two ladies out of the Daimler. They were both in floral slack suits and dark glasses. That's them, said Rod. Jesus, said Dan with rare approval. Which one is mine? The blonde. Ha! Dan grinned for the first time since their meeting. Why the hell are we standing here? Why indeed? Asked Rod. His stomach was tied up in knots that twisted tighter as he went down the front steps toward Terry. Mrs. Steiner, I'm so glad you could come. With a wild lift of elation, he saw it was still there. He had not imagined it. It was there in her eyes and her smile. Thank you, Mr. Ironsides. She was like a schoolgirl again, uncertain of herself, flustered. I'd like you to meet Mrs. Albright. Joy, this is Rodney Ironsides. Hello. He smiled at her as he clasped her hand. It's gin time, I think. Dan was waiting at the bar for them, and Rod made the introductions. Joy is so excited at the chance of watching the dancing, said Terry as they sat down on the bar stools. She's been looking forward to it for 4 days. and for an instant Joy looked stunned. "You'll love it," agreed Dan, moving in to take up a position at Joy's elbow. "I wouldn't miss it for anything." Joy was a tall, slim girl with long, straight, golden hair that hung to her shoulders. Her eyes were cool green, but her mouth, when she smiled, was soft and warm. She smiled now full into Dan's eyes. "Nor would I," she said. And with relief, Rod knew he could devote all his attention to Terry Steiner. Joy Albright would be more than adequately looked after. He ordered drinks, and all four of them promptly lost further interest in tribal dancing. At one stage, Rod told Terry Steiner, "I'm going up to Johannesburg this evening. There's no point in having your unfortunate chauffeur sit around all afternoon. Let him go, and I'll take you home." "Good," Terry agreed immediately. "Would you tell him, please?" The next time, Rod looked at his watch. It was 3:30. "Good Lord," he exclaimed. "If we don't hurry, it will be all over." Reluctantly, Joy and Dan, who had their heads close together, drew apart. The overflow from the amphitheatre pressed about them, a merry, jostling throng, all inhibitions long since evaporated in the primeval excitement of the dance, much like the crowd at a bullring. Rod and Dan ran interference for the girls, ploughing a path through the main gateway and down to their reserved seats in the front row. All four of them were laughing and flushed by the time they were seated. The excitement about them was infectious, and the liquor had heightened their sensibilities. An expectant hum of voices. "The Shangans!" And the audience craned towards the entrance, from which pranced a dozen drummers. Their long wooden drums hung on rawhide straps about their necks. They took up stations around the circular earthen stage. "Tap, tap, tap, tap," from one of the drummers, and silence gripped the amphitheatre. "Tap, tap, tap, tap." Naked, except for their brief loincloths, stooped over the drums that they clasped between their knees, they began to lay down the rhythm of the dance. It was a broken, disturbing beat that jerked and twitched like a severed nerve. A compelling, demanding sound, the pulse of a continent and a people. Then came the dancers, shuffling. Row upon row, headdresses dipping and rustling, the animal tail kilts swirling, war rattles at the wrists and ankles, black muscles already oiled with the sweat of excitement, coming in slowly, rank upon majestic rank, moving as though the drums were pumping life into them. A shrill blast on a duiker horn, and the ranks whirled like dry leaves in the wind. They fell again into a new pattern, and through the opening in their midst came a single gigantic figure. Big King. The name blew like a sigh through the audience, and immediately the drums changed their rhythm. Faster, demanding. And the dancers hissed in their throats a sound like storm surf rushing up a stony beach. Big King flung his arms wide, braced on legs like black marble columns, his head thrown back. He sang a single word of command, shrilling it, and in instantaneous response, every right knee was brought up to the level of the chest. 1/2 second's pause, and then 200 horny bare feet stamped down simultaneously, with a crash that shook the amphitheatre to its foundations. The Shangans began to dance, and reality was gone in the moving, charging, swirling, retreating ranks. Once Rod tore his eyes from the spectacle. Terry Steiner was sitting forward on the beach, eyes sparkling, lips slightly parted, completely lost in the erotic turmoil and barbaric splendour of it. Joy and Dan had a firm hold on each other's hands. Their shoulders and the outside of their thighs were pressed tightly together. And Rod was stabbed by a painful thrust of envy. Afterwards, back in the ladies' bar of the club, there was very little conversation, but they were all of them tensed up, restless, moved by strange undercurrents and interplays of primitive desires and social restraints. "Well," said Rod at last, "if I'm to get you two ladies back to Johannesburg at a decent hour..." Dan and Joy spoke together. "Don't worry, Rod, I'll..." "Dan says he will..." Then they stopped and grinned at each other sheepishly. "I take it that Dan has suddenly remembered that he has to go to Johannesburg this evening also, and he has offered to give you a lift," asked Rod dryly. And they laughed in confirmation. "It looks as though we are on our own, Mrs. Steiner." Rod turned to Terry. "I'll trust you," said Terry.
"If you do that, you're crazy," said Dan.
Outside the Maserati, darkness was falling swiftly. The horizon blending into the black sky, isolating lights winking at them out of the surrounding belt. Rod switched on the headlights, and the instrument panel glowed softly, turning the interior into a warm, secluded place, isolating them from the world. The wind whispered, and the tires and the engine hummed a gentle, intimate refrain. Terry Steiner sat with her legs curled up under her, cuddled into the soft maroon leather of the bucket seat. She was staring ahead down the path of the headlights, and she seemed withdrawn and yet very close. Every few minutes, Rod would take his eyes from the road and study her profile briefly. He did so again, and this time she met his gaze frankly. "You realize what is happening?" she asked.
"Yes," he answered as frankly.
"And you know how dangerous it could be for you?"
"And you?"
"No, not me. I am invulnerable. I am a Hirschfeld. But you, it could destroy you."
Rod shrugged.
"If we counted the consequences before every action, nobody would do anything." "Have you thought that I might be a spoiled little rich girl amusing myself? I might do this all the time."
"You might," Rod agreed. They were silent for a long while, and then Terry spoke again.
"Rod?"
She used his given name for the first time.
"Yes?" "I don't, you know. I really don't."
"I guess that," said Rod.
"Thank you."
She opened her bag. "I need a cigarette. I feel as though I'm standing poised on the edge of a cliff, and I've got this terrible compulsion to hurl myself over the edge."
"Light me one, Terry." "You need one also?"
"Badly."
They smoked in silence again, both of them staring ahead. Then Terry rolled down the window and flicked the cigarette butt away. "You've got the job, you know." All day she had wanted to tell him. It had been bubbling inside her. Watching his face, she saw his lips stiffen, his eyes crease into slits. "Did you hear me?" she asked at last, and he braked the Maserati, swinging it off onto the shoulder of the road. He put on the handbrake and turned to face her.
"Terry, what did you say?" I said you've got the job.
What job?
He demanded harshly. Pop signed the instruction this morning. You'll receive it on Monday. You're the new general manager of the Sonder Ditch. She wanted to go on and say, and I got it for you. I made Pops give it to you. I never will, she promised. I will never spoil it for him. He must believe he won it fairly, not as my gift.